back to our anime show. I'm Binge Monster.
And I'm a Green Queen.
Today we wanted to talk about Blue-Eyed Samurai.
Which is actually Blue-Eye Samurai.
Oh, it's not Blue-Eyed.
I, for the longest time, was calling it Blue-Eyed Samurai, and it's not wrong. Like, it is what it is, but it's technically called Blue-Eye Samurai. It came out in the year of 2023. It is technically an action, not anime, right? I don't think this is technically speaking an anime. I could be wrong.
We're going to count it.
It's as good. It's like one of those ones. It's like Avatar, where we're like, it is as good as anime is. So it is not a cartoon. Simply put, it is an anime.
Now, this came out on Netflix, 2023? And you and Cheeks were trying to get me to watch this, actually, if I recall, when you guys were watching this. At my wedding when we were in Nepal, right?
So funny. We had started it just before because it had come out maybe a week or two prior to when we actually watched it.
Yeah.
And we started watching it before your wedding and then like just we had some downtime someday. And so, yeah, we were watching it the week of your wedding. And I think I finished it on the plane. Like, we loved it.
It's so good. We watched it. I'm sure like you, we crushed it in like less than a week, like period. It was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of downtime at the wedding, so I'm glad you were able to sneak this in.
It was truly like some afternoon where it was like, and now it's free time, and then we're all going to have dinner together at night. So I think I was like, okay, I'm going to do a little bit of shopping. And then I went out, did a little bit of shopping, came back, and then someone else asked me to go out and do a little bit more shopping. And I was like, no, I'm going to lay in this hotel room and watch this show with my boyfriend.
I don't blame you. So what, for our listeners, is Blue-Eyed Samurai about?
Sure. So the short answer is it is about a master of swords lives life in disguise while seeking revenge on Edo period Japan, which kind of no. We follow Mizu, who is our main protagonist, as this person we find out from the very beginning is off to try to seek revenge on someone, something. This person is our Blue-Eye Samurai. In a time at which Japan was having no sort of foreign relations, no Western folk, it was truly their borders were closed in this, you know, fictitious Japan. In this Edo period time, where absolutely no white people were there. So in fact, people in Japan, if they did see someone who was white or talk about someone who was white or basically not Japanese, it was very much like, you're a dog, you are like not welcome here, you're disgusting, you're tainted, what have you. So for this person, our main protagonist, Mizu, to have blue eyes is definitely something that is that they try to hide through their glasses and so forth.
There was definitely a master race. A kind of a vibe coming from the Japanese at this period of time. If you weren't Japanese, you were lesser, both like societally speaking and also I think legally speaking too, obviously. So
yeah, you could like not exist. It was like outlawed, like you would be put to jail or you would be executed. Like you could not be blue-eyed in this land.
It's in this fictitious land. Interesting that we're talking about this week because this episode is being recorded on the cusp of episode 3 of Shogun, this series that's on FX or Hulu, if you don't have FX, which it covers a similar time period. And there's a really interesting exchange between the foreigners and Shogun and the Japanese and what their relationship is like. And so there's some similarities that I'm starting to see. Just in terms of the historical context between the two, which if you're a fan of anime, you're a fan of like this period of Japan, my quick plug to go look at Shogun because it's so incredible. So incredible. But so Blue-Eyed Samurai, my quick thoughts on it are this show's incredible. It was a complete shock to me. I normally don't like shows with this type of animation style. And in the first, you know, 5 seconds, you would understand kind of what I mean by that. It's kind of that like anime style CGI hybrid that is often not done extremely well, but somehow they just really make it work here in a really beautiful way. It's probably the best I've seen, right up there with some of the CGI moments that you see in like Attack on Titan, particularly in the final season. But it's really well written. The fighting in it is phenomenal. The main character is phenomenal. I think the dialogue is great. It's just a really exciting show, and I don't think it gets enough, nearly enough credit. It is a Netflix only, which is shocking. And I know one of the things that we want to answer by the end of this episode is like, is this the greatest anime Netflix has ever put out? I'm just going to throw that out there, because we are hoping to answer that question by the end of this episode. But yeah, what were your overall thoughts?
I really loved it kind of from the beginning. I think I too had a little bit of a pause with the animation style. Mm-hmm. I had just heard so much about it, and I was like, I just have to watch this. But like, it really scratches that itch for me as like a Western person who, you know, knows a lot about the samurai realistic lifestyle, but like really is like about that, like, how do I say it, that ideology of the samurai that has like been passed of like, mm-hmm. these are noble warriors and they have a code and blah blah blah. So like it really scratches a lot of like that narrative for me, even though, you know, culturally significant or culturally accurate, who knows. Mm-hmm. Actually, we do know, but in it's not, they're trained killers and they're evil and so forth. Well, not evil, but anyway, all of those like sort of ideologies that are passed to me, it really does scratch the itch for me, because right when it opens, we can clearly see the fight sequences are so good. I mean, the main character, the story is so layered. And I just really felt like it was that kind of story. Like every episode felt like we were really tearing back the layers of a greater story. With all these twists and turns and like such a great cast, such truly incredible voice actors on this. Yeah, I don't know. I really fell head over heels with this right when I saw it from the first episode. Honestly. For sure.
Maybe we could start by dissecting the music. You know, I think particularly with shows like Avatar The Last Airbender or even Naruto for that matter, I think music really plays a big role in the storytelling. And this is a particularly interesting show in the sense that, as we've been talking about, there are characters that are Japanese. There are also these foreigner characters. There are light comedic moments, but there's also, I don't know if that I would necessarily call this a comedy, but in the sense of the mean, I think it's pretty seriously toned. How do you feel the music really amplifies the story or like makes the story kind of stand out?
You know what? I really think something that you said is actually making my point sort of stick out, where like the music felt diverse but did still feel cohesive to this story. Mm-hmm. Like I swear there's some action sequence towards the end, and do you know what one I'm talking about? It was like a rock anthem or something. It was something mm-hmm. so cool, and like while this, you know, while really really incredible combat is happening. So I don't know. It did catch me. So I'm like, does that song in particular, I'm like, does that mean that it's good or does that mean that it fit? Like, I think that was just such a cool moment. So there are a lot of like Easter eggs as far as the music in this from my perspective. But as far as like the Foley and sort of like the world building music, like, you know, everything felt justified. Everything felt right. And in a weird way, like, not much other things like stuck out to me, but I think that that's a testament to how well it fits into the story. I don't know. What are some of your thoughts?
No, I'm in pretty tight agreement with what you're saying here. I really want to emphasize the Foley or the sound effects of the way that objects come into contact with each other in this show, and the sounds that they make when they're in motion are really beautiful. I don't know if beautiful is the right word, but they do just a really great job. Like, there's an element to the story, this isn't very much a spoiler, that, you know, where the main character, the Blue Eye Samurai, is, you learn, is kind of raised by a swordsmith, and the Blue Eye Samurai learns about the art of swordsmithing, and there's a through line theme to the philosophy of swordsmithing and how it is intertwined with the philosophy of a samurai. And one of the things that really resonates with me is every time you hear the metal clashing or the tools that the swordsmiths use to test the quality of the steel or the blade when they're making a sword or when they're, you know, on the final stages of making a sword, and how that like resonates with them and their soul. Like you can hear it. And so I don't know, like I think they just do a really great job, whether it's arrows in motion or swords clashing together or, you know, whatever. I think they do a great job. I wouldn't say that like the music in this takes me out of it. And so to your point, I think they do a really good job of keeping it cohesive to the story. And that's definitely a testament. But I wouldn't say this is like a Made in Abyss or a Naruto where like the song puts me in a mood. Like it doesn't make me weep. But that's okay. Like, I don't think that this show is like a very present in the moment. Like, action is happening constantly. There are very few moments in the show where someone's sitting on a rock contemplating life and feeling feelings, right? So I think that that's fine. I'm okay with that because I don't know that the story necessarily calls for that. Whereas, like, you know, another show like Made in Abyss where they're on this adventure, like that music can really help establish the world. Do you know what I'm saying? Without an action.
I totally know what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, I would agree. There's just that one sequence at the end where I think I was just also like, this is so cool that like I really tuned in with the music and what was happening.
Yeah.
I have to go back and when we're talking about you should no, really go back and watch it. It was like one of the last sequences and the music was particularly like so random and so good. And the voice acting, I feel like, is something that really was just so good. I mean, this has a star-studded cast, like, honestly.
Tell us about the cast, because I actually don't even know who... Well, I do know who plays the Blue Eye Samurai, because I was like, what the heck? She's in everything right now, I feel like. But I don't know about the rest.
Let me get her name just so I don't say it wrong, because I'm not as familiar with her body of work. But Maya Erskine, she is our blue-eyed samurai, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Masioka plays Ringo, which I know that this person was in Bullet Train. I feel like I've seen this person in things before. But Darren Barnett plays Taiga, and he is from that show that I love so much. Oh, Never Have I Ever. He's in Never Have I Ever. But he was also something else, right? Oh no, it is now. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of that other like Netflix teen drama, To All the Boys I Loved Before. But he was in Never Have I Ever, which I watched, and like he was truly like a 22-year-old in a cast of like actual teens. So as another like 20-something adult, I was like, you're different. And he totally plays like the stud. So I was like, yes, you. Brenda Song plays Akemi.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Okay. George Takei plays Seki.
George Takei?
Who is Takei. Thank you. Yes, Takei plays Seki.
That's the guy. That's the oh my guy, right? Like, and he was in Allegiant in Broadway. I'm pretty sure that's... He was also on Star... He's mostly known for Star Trek.
Yeah, he's mostly known for Star Trek. But yeah, that's him.
He plays who?
And then he plays Teki. So that's Akemi's, like, boy. Like, that's her bro that helps her.
Oh, the guy...
Her attendant.
The father figure kind of guy.
Father figure to Akemi, yes. Right. I didn't know who he plays.
I love knowing that now. That's great. Mm-hmm.
This person who's the sword maker, I do not know. They were previously in The Last Emperor, License to Kill, Mortal Kombat, Planet of the Apes, but this is Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. So I don't really know this person, but obviously very credited.
And very
Randall Park is in this. Randall Park.
What is Randall Park in? I don't know if I
Randall Park.
It.
Oh, you totally know Randall Park. He I think was in, he did Fresh Off the Boat. He did, he was in the Ant-Man films. He plays like the cop in the Ant-Man films.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What else did he do? The Interview.
The Asian guy, right?
The Asian guy, yes. Yeah,
the Asian cop in Ant-Man. Because there's only the one, right?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, the Asian cop in Ant-Man, yes. But he plays Heiji Shindo, who I believe is in cahoots with White Boy.
Ah. Oh, Shindo, the one that got. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't know who this Kenneth Branagh is. This person plays Abijah Fowler or Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
All these other people, I'm not quite sure.
How did you feel about Fowler's voice actor? Because, you know, obviously, in anime, I tend to see two different approaches when it comes to Europeans. They could either be from anywhere, or they're like very specifically from one place in Europe. Usually Russian, not that Russia is in Europe, but like Westerner. So like I don't know why, but maybe it's because the proximity to Japan, like Russia's so close. But I had a hard time nailing which country Elijah Fowler was from. Like, was he Irish or was he Scottish or was
he was British? Scottish.
I thought so too, but then it just kind of like weaved in and out. I don't know. Like, I feel like at one point he might have even mentioned Ireland for some reason. But yeah, I don't know. Like, not that it's a critique on the character. That might actually have been the direction also. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think? Maybe I'm alone so on this one.
I think I really liked his voice. It was something where when I think of when they're talking about, I don't know, and it's actually, speaking of Shogun again, this is something that I'm kind of like, ooh, in Shogun, but like, I always imagine that white European people are going to have like UK accents. That's always my thing. I'm always like, oh, they're going to be British.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some capacity. So having him be something like Scottish or Irish was actually kind of like, oh, that's cool. Even though he's evil, but like, I'm an Irish person. So yeah. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. Like, that's definitely not what I expected. This, you know, big red haired person, but I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was great. I really loved Akemi's voice actor. I mean, I really loved what Akemi, what Brenda Song was doing. Obviously, she this person that, who plays Mizu nails it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the casting was very good. I think the voice also for Ringo was fantastic. Like, that just made sense for him. I really did. And I think that they changed. Even Taiga's voice had a lot of change. Because he goes through a lot of change. And, you know, we do get to see Mizu in different parts of her life and so forth. I thought the voice acting was very good. I thought it was very well cast. Did you agree or?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the voice acting is great. And one thing to note is that this is all in English.
Yeah, that's the original language.
And so there's not like a subbed version of this show, right? Because I didn't see
that. I mean, there might be, but it would be like, it would be just a dub of Japanese, right?
Yeah. Yes. You know what I mean? Yes. But yes, what I'm saying is like you can't go watch this in Japanese. You can only watch it in English on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
You correctly categorized that that would be a Japanese dub instead of a subbed.
Yeah. Sorry, I was like,
no, you're not, right.
Because you would, I mean, because I'm like, I guess if people from Japan are watching this, they are watching it in subbed because.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think they absolutely do a phenomenal job. In terms of the, just going back to kind of what I was saying about the ambiguity of the Fowler, who I don't know if I want to call him the villain in the story. He's definitely an important character, and he's a villain depending on how you look at it. He's certainly a villain in the eyes of the main character, who's, you know, to your point, on a path of revenge. And I think a lot of that theme of revenge is really tied to race, because there's a, you know, the main character one of the reasons why it's called a Blue Eye Samurai, and you might have mentioned this earlier, is because the main character is half foreigner, half Japanese, and struggles with that. And, you know, a big part of this plot is seeks to go kill all the foreigners in Japan. Like, that's kind of the crux of it. And, you know, it's really interesting because... Oh, sorry?
Well, I mean, yes, they seek to kill all foreigners in Japan, but they are specific people. So yes. If there are other foreigners in Japan, it's not like this person is just out to kill white people.
Yeah,
like,
fair enough. No, that's a really important correction.
It is revenge against specific people.
Yes, specific foreigners who likely could have been their father.
Yes.
And by extension of that, put them on this path of just, you know,
misery
as a mixed child living in this country, and kind of as a revenge to putting them through that and bringing them to that kind of a world. Right. So super fair.
Sorry.
No. You're absolutely correct. And so, you know, that the concept of race and that concept of racism is obviously very, very present thematically in this anime. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, like, it's something that we've talked about for sure on this podcast before. In other anime, you often see racism indirectly because the animation industry in general, coming from Japan, does not always depict foreigners in ways that we would want and expect them to, particularly people of color and so forth. And you see elements of racism present in the way that they represent people. And here, the story focuses around that a little bit. And yeah, I mean, what do you think about the way that they present these themes, and how do you think, like, if we had to guess, because we're not Japanese ourselves, but how do you think that folks in Japan might perceive this from a historical perspective? Like, if you just had to guess.
Wow. Okay. So what you're asking is, how do I think people in Japan might respond to seeing blatant racism fictitiously by their people onto foreigners?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I can only imagine because I am not Japanese and I have never been there. But in any culture, there will be historically, even in the present, there will be elements of internalized racism and so forth. So your question is very hard to answer as someone who is not Japanese, but as somebody who lives in a society where definitely racism is rooted into the way that the world around me is built in the US, and like quite literally, and, you know, internalized racism as it's been, you know, explored and really brought to the forefront of conversation over the last couple of years. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there are some people where if older generations do watch this, they have a little bit more of like a, I don't know, maybe there is something there. Maybe there are I truly believe there probably are people in Japan that don't like foreigners.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to have a mixed bag. I think you're going to have a mixed bag of people that might be receptive to this, and some people that might live in Tokyo and be totally used to foreigners being around and like not having that be such like an anomaly, that will take to this very differently than someone who, you know, might be from like a smaller town with older generation of parents or like people around them that might already kind of have a hint of this sort of like internalized and generational like racism passed down, or judgment, if you will. So I don't know. I don't know. Do you have an answer to your own question?
Well, I have some thoughts. One of which is, you know, it's not typical that the main character of a samurai story is not just Japanese, right? Like, yeah, Afro Samurai okay. was yeah, a yeah. pretty unique story in that way, and made the world of the samurai open for the African and Black community. That's one thing that Samuel L. Jackson just absolutely nailed. I'd be curious to see what the numbers look like for Blue-Eyed Samurai in Japan, and whether people actually really resonate with this. Because again, that struggle of being a foreigner in Japan might not thematically resonate with everybody because they are Japanese. And so I wonder if there's maybe a little bit of a shame element to that. But I also bring this up because I think what this has done really, really well, and I think Netflix is brilliant for doing this, is it capitalizes on the fascination that non-Japanese people have about samurai. And make no mistake, like, there's a massive global fascination with these warriors, particularly around this time period. And what they've done is they've opened the world up to Caucasians and in many ways have created a scenario and a character that white people can resonate with. You know, and yeah, it's just, it's interesting, right? Like, it's,
Well, there's something very interesting about this, because I did a little bit of, like, just very loose Google search on, like, is there historical accuracy to any of this? Because I knew there wasn't, but, like, I was just curious. And there actually, it's, from what I read, there apparently is loosely, Mizu's character is loosely based on a white samurai in Japan. Did you see this as well? Right. So there was a person named William Adams who was like an explorer, traveler, whatever, an English navigator. And in the 1600s, basically was one of the first English people to even reach Japan. And then from there, made a friend named Jan Justin, apparently. And then earlier, but yeah, it's said that this person, William Adams, was one of the first Western samurai.
Interesting.
Of this time, which is so interesting. But yeah, like, this person, so that's why this story, it's said in the light research that this story is somewhat loosely based on that, but maybe it's just like the idea of literally having a white samurai, like, maybe somebody looked that up and was like, oh, this would be interesting to now create this whole story about this. But
yeah,
very loosely, there was a white samurai in the 1600s, apparently,
and not to give it too big of a spoiler, but at the end of the season, you see that they start to bring other Western European countries into the world, and that's also not something that you typically see, particularly from this era. Usually, when you're watching an anime or a story in anime centered around Edo area Japan, it stays in Edo area Japan. Or mainland Japan, I should say. But now they're bringing these other countries in, and I just find it interesting, though, because I don't know that it's a coincidence that this kind of a story is coming out around the same time that Shogun is coming out. Like, they're what I mean by that is the underlying through line of what it means to be a white person or a foreigner in Japan, and how foreigners, negatively or positively, depending on what side of the coin you're on, influence policy and government and legislation. And so, yeah, I mean, a trade, obviously, being the main one. Religion is a very common thing, right? So yeah, I just wonder, like, and I don't know enough about this, and maybe I'll read up on this on the side, but I've talked about in previous episodes where sports anime line up with real life events that are taking place, I wonder if there's upcoming debates or legislation that's being considered that in some way relates to trade with Europe, or I don't know. Not that I'm trying to create a conspiracy here, but I'm just saying, like, I would be curious if there's something happening.
Well, I think there's also something interesting about, like, even though Shogun is something that is, like, majority of the text is in Japanese and starring, this piece is starring Japanese-speaking and Japanese people, which is literally fantastic and really nice. But I think that like, I don't know what studio Shogun is coming from, but like, it's showing on Hulu. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't think that this show is made necessarily for Japanese audiences. I think this is made for American audiences. Mm. And like, same thing with Blue-Eyed Samurai. Like, this is clearly made for, English speaking people.
Yeah.
Directly. Although enjoyed by all or whoever. So I think that's also interesting. It's like, it's two shows that have similar themes, I'd say,
yeah,
of these things. And they're both not made by Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
or not produced, you know? Yeah.
Fair point. No. That's really
just interesting.
Point. Yeah.
To add on to the conspiracy.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, who knows? Maybe this is, maybe there are American Japanese cultural, what are those lobbies that are lobbyists that are looking at the continual trade between the countries and are interested in investing in art that promotes tourism or something. And people know that one of the larger grabs, for at least from an American perspective, is probably like going to see samurai related things. Like when I went to Japan, right. I went to the samurai, museum in Tokyo. Like that was definitely something that I had to go see. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that they're considering. So I guess coming off of that very, I don't know if I'm gonna call it a heavy topic, but that very, serious topic of
very serious
themes of race and politics and policy, even potentially, maybe we could talk about something lighter now. Maybe we could talk about character design. What are your thoughts on the character design for Blue-Eyed Samurai?
I thought the character design was great. I mean, like, they're like, I think it was really cool that our main character wears like colored glasses to try to hide what their eyes look like.
Mm.
I think that was such a cool detail that like, I don't know. I'm so stupid. Like I didn't get that right away, but like within the first episode, I was like, oh, that's why we're wearing that. Like that's why we're wearing this. I thought it was just like, we were wearing cool glasses.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, the choice and the way.
That's not true. That's not your fault. I think it was that the story was facilitated in a way where you were meant to organically figure that out on your own. I don't think you were meant to get that from the first moment because you don't realize the significance of the color of the eye until a certain point. Give yourself some credit there. I'm not gonna let you do that. I think I was in the same boat. Anyways,
okay. First of all, it's called Blue Eye Samurai, and in the first title, like in the very before you see anything, it says, hey, this takes place around this time, and no one else was allowed in Japan. The pieces were not connecting as early as maybe they could have. But anyway, all to say, I mean, I would say the character design is really good. Like, I think everybody kind of makes sense. Their stature, what's important to them, very clearly marked on, like, the clothes that they wear, the choices they make. I think it was very, very interesting to have Ringo have no hands. I think that was a very interesting choice for that character.
And yet still be able to use his arms.
To make soba and use his arms. And we eventually find out what that is. But like, I think that his character development over hopefully more seasons will be very interesting. And I think that if he isn't already, he will grow to be a lot of people's favorite character. And I can't wait to see how he grows. Even beyond his design, I think the design of Fowler makes perfect sense. Totally. Big, intimidating person against our Mizu, who I thought the character design was great. I thought the world building was really good.
For sure.
No notes.
Agreed. One thing I think they've really nailed that I don't know how appreciated it is by people who watch this. And I say this as somebody who, kind of really realized this only when I went to Japan. But the detail on the kimonos, especially for kimonos that are available to royalty.
Yes.
And the attention to detail in terms of how they hang them, how they wear them, how they move when they're inside of them, when they're walking, like all of those details, I feel like they really absolutely nail in this show. And as a listener, you're probably wondering why I'm talking about like just kimono, but I can't tell you, when you go to Japan and see people wear them, for example, to shrines and to temples, which I had an opportunity to do when I was with our friend Janelle and when we went to Kyoto, it's mesmerizing. It is truly, it would be akin to watching a bride in her white wedding dress walk down the street. It's just one of those things that, it's not like you've probably never seen a bride before, but there is something just more than the fabric behind it, right? Like there's just a magic about it when you see people wearing it. And when I saw it in Japan, I was really captivated by it. I was really shocked because, I don't know, like I've seen it before. I've seen it in anime, I've seen it on TV. But when you see it in person and you see the elegance, it's just a stunning textile. It sounds so obnoxious, a stunning textile, but it is. It really is. And I love how they do this. And to your point, I love how they differentiate the quality. And you can tell like the kimono that Akemi wears as a princess versus like the kimono of like the everyday shop worker is super different. So, and also the physicality. I know this isn't necessarily costume design, but the physicality and how they move and how that also tells you the difference in terms of their hierarchy in society is also fascinating. The way they hold themselves, the way they move throughout the spaces in their clothes. I just think they really nail that. And that's surprising, particularly because of the art style again. But yeah, I think that they really, really nail that. And also the weapons are cool too. Like the way that they've designed the weapons and the accuracy of those designs. I think that they do a really good job in, you know, how they differentiate who's a nobody versus who is a somebody based on the quality of the sword. You could tell like the detail, you know?
Yeah.
So I think,
well, what did you think about the fighting now that we're on? It feels like a quick jump over. Yeah. What did you think about the fighting and the fight scenes?
So, one of the things I think they did a really good job of, and this is kind of an extension to the costume conversation too, is, and you see that many of these swordsmen, train in a specific school and a specific style of kendo or not kendo. What is the word?
There's buko. I don't know.
Sword play, whatever the right word for that is. Everybody, you know, tends to seemingly study in a particular school in a particular style. And I appreciate that they try to bring consistency to the way people move from those styles. I think that they do that really well. And that might not be something that you notice unless you really watch it and you look for that. But I think that they nail that. Jesus, the main character is a stunning fighter. Like the way they're able to move, it's so fluid. It feels human, you know. It doesn't feel like a show where, like Demon Slayer, where the ability to fight an opponent at a high level is dependent on, I was going to say magic, but that's not the right word. But, you know, things that human beings can't physically emanate. Like, and the other thing that I really like is that it feels also realistic. The main character is not indestructible. They get hurt often, and you see how they're able to adapt on the fly, even with those injuries, and they keep that consistency throughout. So I think that they could have put a lot less attention to detail and not made it so hard on themselves with the story, and it was still been fine, but they really take it there, and it's very realistic. It feels very grounded, and so for that reason, I really love it. What about you?
I would agree. I mean, I really echo everything you said. And I want to add that, like, I think they were really inventive with, like, found objects and found opportunity. Like, they display Mizu's train of thought in a visual way where we are able to follow it and go, oh, my God, why would I never have thought of that?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really a testament to how they animate it. You know, I think that that's something that's, and it also feels very fluid. Like, there are no times where in traditional anime, I feel like there will be like a freeze frame and a zoom in, and then we hear kind of like what the character is saying from like their perspective or in their head. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen here. Like, that does not happen in this, which I think is like kind of nice.
Yeah.
It feels like a fight scene that I would see in like a TV show.
You mean like, you know, that inner monologue isn't there of like,
it's not there.
Went to the left and now I got to do this too. Like, you don't
yes,
see that.
And
at
like
all.
While they're yeah. doing that, it's like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like they're frozen and you're getting that. That doesn't happen here. So the fights, that lends to the fights feeling very fluid. And then with them not telling us basically the story of what's going on, I think that it makes the like surprises and the turns and then like the triumphs in the fight very digestible and very engrossing for the person watching. So I did appreciate how inventive they were with what they were doing. I don't know if you can hear my cat. Sorry, he's running around.
No, I'm really glad you brought that up though. That's a big critique I think a lot of people have of anime, is having to sit through that internal monologue instead of just actually doing the fighting. In fact, I know that's mm-hmm. something that my wife really struggles with. I think even early in your days, that was something that you had said too, if I remember.
Oh my God. It's because we were talking about like the jutsu of like turning a bubble to a frog. Yeah, and I'm like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah. That was early OG Naruto, right? Like the fight with Zabuza felt like forever.
Tough.
Yeah.
Tough. Yeah. Oh, yeah, tough. Yeah.
So funny. Yeah, all very, very fair points, though. So I guess, you know, we can come back to our main question, though, right? So is this the best anime Netflix has ever created when we consider all these different points? The animation, the music, the costume, the fighting, the voice acting, the themes present, and the quality of the storytelling. What's your take?
I have to understand something before I answer this, because I know that if I answer this earnestly, I just feel like I can't. So what I have to understand is Cyberpunk Edgerunners exists.
It does.
Cyberpunk Edgerunners. But Cyberpunk Edgerunners, I think, is an anime.
It is, yeah.
But it was only released on Netflix. So I think that this is different. So I feel like if I were to say, is this the best anime Netflix has put out? Is Blue Eye Samurai in the same bucket as Cyberpunk Edgerunners?
I think
because I bring this up because I did not watch Cyberpunk Edgerunners, but I know that I think it won Anime of the Year.
It did.
The year that it came out.
It did.
But I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
So in good faith, you know,
I feel the same way about Castlevania, because people love Castlevania, and I've seen some episodes of Castlevania. I've seen clips of Castlevania. So I think like right off the bat, Castlevania, and to be fair, you actually bring up one really important point, which is, you know, we're talking about Netflix only anime that Netflix mm-hmm. produce. Right, that's an important distinction to this question, because there are lots of anime that are on Netflix that are also on Crunchyroll and were not actually produced by Netflix, and Blue Lock being one of them, I believe, right? So
Zom 100, yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't watched Castlevania, and I don't even think I finished Cyberpunk Edgerunners either. But I still want to say that I personally think that it's better. I enjoyed it more.
Okay.
It's a story that I think I would actually watch again too. And I have to factor that in. No, really. Like, I probably I will probably finish Cyberpunk Edgerunners. I probably will, because it was actually rather good. It was. But I don't think I'll watch that again. And I probably will never watch Castlevania again. I may not even finish it, to be honest.
I know already. I don't give a fuck. I know that this is better than Castlevania. I know it is. I don't care. I do not care. Castlevania is boring as shit. I don't like it. I'll finish it when I fucking feel like it.
Yeah.
Blue Eye Samurai, far better than Castlevania.
Yeah.
But I can't in full confidence say that about Cyberpunk Edgerunner, so I do struggle with this. However, to your point, I would argue this is the best anime that Netflix has put out. Netflix alone.
Yes. I think we're on the same page. It'd be very interesting, though, to see how the viewership differs globally.
I would love to know.
The US between Castlevania and Blue Eye Samurai. I'd be super, super curious.
And Cyberpunk Edgerunner. I would be more interested to see Cyberpunk Edgerunners and this.
Did I say Castlevania again? I meant.
You did.
I did not mean that. I meant Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
I'm literally like, don't say it again because it's not good. It doesn't belong.
It's so popular, so weird. Like, I don't know.
Because people are weird. Don't they like fucking that thing? Like, don't they like shit to each other?
I don't know.
Pick anything else to simp over. Weird, horny vampires that are depressed and weird.
Weird, horny vampires as a theme resonates with everyone, unfortunately, particularly young adults. Hence the rise of Twilight. Anyways.
Not to absolutely dump on Castlevania right before we close out the show, but I think it's my duty as a person in the media to give my strong opinions when I have them. Because if I don't, people are just going to say we like everything. Which we might, but then they're going to be like, you're not a credible source because you just say that you like everything and you're bought out by the franchise. So anyway, this has been really fun. And I've been a green queen.
And I'm a binge monster.
Let us know what your favorite Netflix thing was, please.
Yeah.